SMU in terms of his appointment and ensuring that it also does not become a reoccurrence in the sector. Just to confirm, if we do have all, if we do have quorum, because we would be adopting a report, so we need to ensure that most majority of the members are here. Can I check from Shonazo or Anele if we're all here?
Good morning, Chairperson. Good morning to honorable members. I see in the platform for now four honorable members. It is you, Chairperson, Mashtatsi, honorable Tsi, honorable Tsi. So at the moment, we are still trying to hear.
Okay, well, we can proceed then, if that's the case. So can we give you maybe a few minutes to call members? I think from the ANC component, we'll leave that up to Honorable Mahlatsi. And then from the other parties, we'd require that the committee assists in locating members. Maybe they thought we're starting at 9 or not, or maybe they don't want to be part of the process. So can we please just find out if members are aware that we are supposed to have, we should have started by now. Thank you.
Recording stopped. must apologize. I didn't realize we were starting off bus 8 this morning. But thanks to Anelia, I'm on now.
Thank you, Honorable Borshoff. We're still checking on other members. So thanks for that.
Good morning, Chair. I wish to confirm that we now have 7 members in the platform. We do form a quorum. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Recording in progress.
Thank you very much for that. Sorry, apologies, colleagues. Thank you very much for that, Anele, and to all colleagues that may have assisted in locating members. And thank you very much to members as well for hopping onto the platform. I believe we do now meet quorum, and so we are able to then go into the deliberations of this report. Due to time, I'm not going to preamble too much, so I'll go directly to our colleagues from the research unit just to give us maybe 5 to 10 minutes or even less of an analysis of, their own reflections of this particular process. Then we'll hand over to colleagues from the legal unit, and then we'll open for members to engage the report so that we can make necessary recommendations, amendments, or add any recommendations, or, there are a number of grammar errors and as well as spelling errors that we might have to look into. And I think colleagues from the research unit, this is work that is in terms of the grammar and the spelling and that's work I think that we must allow ourselves to continue doing in refining the document that we might not get through today necessarily. So let me just, it's 8:42 now. Maybe I'll hand over to Memudiba and the team to give their input at this point.
Good morning, Chairperson and honorable members, and good morning, colleagues. I'm not sure if I'm audible.
We can hear you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I don't even know where to start with this process because, as you indicated earlier on, this was a very long process. Today, we are almost at the end of it, given so much of work that went into it. I wouldn't also like to make a longer preamble, just to say we have worked together as a team to make sure that we produce this report. Unfortunately, as you said, Chairperson, there were some errors. There were so many eyes that went into looking at this report. Thank you, Chairperson, again. I just want to say, in our analysis of the information that was presented before the committee, all those documentation, the big files that each member has received, we were able to analyze and arrive at, some observations that we thought members will be able to engage on, and also proposed some recommendations for the consideration by members. Maybe just to move straight into some of the observations that we felt maybe we need to highlight is the manner in which the University of Venda Council processed the sexual harassment complaint against Prof. Which was laid or lodged by Prof. Pendler. And I need to indicate, Chairperson, that working with evidence that was presented before us, it was clear that the University of Venda Council misdirected itself against the University of Venda policies, especially the sexual harassment policy, because after receiving the mediation report in 2011, which was inconclusive, instead of them implementing a clause 5.2, they didn't. And then they put it aside and said, we are waiting for the outcomes of the external processes so that we will be able to move forward. And we noted that the university policy did not provide for the halting of internal processes while waiting for the external processes. So this one was one of the failures that we have identified from the process that was put in place by the University of Venda. And we have also noted that Prof. Benda was dismissed 2 days before the report of the mediator could be submitted to the council. And we found that as a result of that, Prof. Benda was no longer covered by the university policies. Even the psychosocial support could not be provided to him. And as we said, HR also could not call, you know, for the submission or from the vice chancellor to say, okay, because now we need to implement this policy, this is what you need to do so that we can establish if there was a prima facie evidence that you'll be charged. So that process was not put in place. And, you know, we also noted in that process that, you know, there were some inconsistencies where they said, you know, the HR was supposed to have acted, took action. And then the HR director said, no, it wasn't our space. It was the space of the council, because the VC is appointed by council and accounts to the council. So we have noted through all this process that these challenges was created by the gaps in the sexual harassment policy, because it was not clearly providing for the procedures of saying, let's say, for example, when the misconduct is by the vice chancellor, how do you move forward? So in some cases, then the university official will say the policy is only applicable to the employees, and then council will say no, but the vice chancellor is covered. But there is no clear process which really created this, as we have heard as well, the former chairperson of the HR council committee, who said, we've noted these challenges when we were supposed to deal with the matter of the sexual harassment complaint against the VC. However, in that space, they did not even amend the sexual harassment policy until now. It's only in the response of the VC to the committee that, no, we are dealing with, we are addressing the lacuna and the gaps that we have identified, you know, in the policy. But they had the whole time since the matter was put on their table since 2011, but it's only in 2021 that they are trying to deal with this matter, which is a decade after, you know. So opportunities presented itself for them to be able to address that, but they didn't, you know, address it. And also one of the areas, Chairperson, that we made some findings was with regard to the referral of the CEG report for judicial review, where Mr. Maja authorized the Vice Chancellor to lodge an application to review and set aside the report without the council resolution. So as much as the Mr. Maja, the former chairperson of council, wrote to council members to inform them about the concerns that were raised by the legal representative with regard to the CEG report, there was no formal process where the members of the council could sit and consider the report, so consider the letter. However, Mr. Maja went on and authorized the vice chancellor to lodge that application without a council resolution. We thought it's irregular, because the statute of the University of Venda provides that there could be the chairperson of council can call an extraordinary meeting. So there is a provision, but the chairperson did not use it, but individually authorized the vice chancellor to lodge the application to review and set aside the record of the CGE. And one of the things that we also identified is that Prof. Mpati was conflicted in the matter. He was at the center of that matter, but still they didn't look at the conflict of interest. They still authorized him to lodge the review against the report. And also the failure of the Univen Council to oppose the application by Prof. Mbatji to review and set aside the second mediation report, which after the CGE, there was sort of an agreement between the CGE and Univen to say, we'll excise certain things and then the recommendation will still remain. And then one of the court directive was to say, you need to call on the mediator's report, which they did. And based on that report, then they exonerated Prof. Mbatji because they indicated that there was a consensual relationship between Prof. Mbatji and Prof. Pendra. And based on that, there's no basis for the complaint of Prof. Pendra. And then they decided that there's no prima facie case, and then the matter is closed, permanently closed. So meaning that Prof. Mbatji was exonerated on the basis that there was a consensual relationship, there was no sexual harassment. However, later on, when Prof. Mbatji was exonerated, he went to court to review the mediator's report and set it aside in totality. So which is the case where we are saying that here that you have reviewed this and set aside this report, meaning that the decision that was taken based on the findings of this report will no longer stand because this report falls off. So which when the committee was putting this matter to the former council chairpersons, they said, okay, in hindsight, we do accept that it was, you know, an oversight on our side that we did not support, you know, the review, or yeah, we did not oppose the review of this application, okay, because now their decision falls off based on the fact that that report no longer is null and void.
To access the order paper for today, or
and then we've also noted, Chairperson, that most of the time certain things were happening without the knowledge of the council. University officials will, you know, take decisions on certain matters without, you know, the knowledge or even the resolution of council. One of those things is the financial settlement that was proposed,
yeah, so if you
know, to Prof. Pendra.
Right,
we heard that this was the process that, you know, was facilitated by Advocate
right?
Lambani
and
Dr. Chitereke, where a settlement of 1.3 million was proposed to Prof. Pendra. And then one of the things that, you know, was very interesting is that council didn't know about this. And there was an allegation also by Dr. Chitereke that the offer couldn't, you know, go forward because it was above the signing powers of the vice chancellor. So we did request as well from the university to give us a letter, and you know that was submitted to a Prof. Pendra's lawyers, but they said they couldn't find it in their records. So which is one of the things, like, but when these decisions that affect the institution and the funds of the institution are going to be used in that process, but you don't have the records, you don't even know what is happening. For us, it's something that we really need to note with a great concern. And as well,
so it's
the issue of alleged abuse of subsistence. We found that as we requested evidence from the institution, we requested an evidence in 2019 to say we have this allegation that the vice chancellor has already had already used over 966,000 mid-year of 2016, and we need evidence to this matter. And what we were given was that the vice chancellor has used over 1 million, not even 966,000. This is information that we received from the institution, that the SNT paid to the vice chancellor in 2016 was 1 million. And then when the vice chancellor was giving his testimony, he said, I don't know where these people are getting this information from, because what I have received is 120,000. And then within this 120, inclusive of this 120,000 is the SNT performance bonus and also other benefits, which means his SNT is way less than 120, because in the 120,000 that he was referring to, he said it covers both SNT performance bonus and other benefits. Then based on that, we wrote back to the university to say, give us, you know, disaggregate this over 1 million in terms of the trips that the Vice Chancellor has taken, and also provide us with the authorization of all those trips, and then give us information on how much S&T was paid on each trip by the Vice Chancellor. Then we got a response detailing the trips that the Vice Chancellor undertook. And then it says now that the Vice Chancellor was paid S&T amounting to 153,000. So meaning that we have like three evidence sources, two from the same institution, which are contradictory. So we are also noting that the institution has given us, you know, contradictory evidence, while also Prof. Mbatha is saying that he was paid 120, which is inclusive of those three budget line items that I have mentioned. So even here, there's still some inconsistencies. We are not sure whether this was to conceal information. How do you give us a figure of 1 million and you later change? And then we also, in that latest information that we have received, we asked what was the budget allocation for the Vice Chancellor's office for S&T. We were told it was over 600 and something thousand. And somewhere during the year, they've topped up that with over 300,000. But they're not giving us the reason why there was reprioritization from other accounts to the VC's S&T account. And then you say the VC has claimed only 120, even less than that. So yeah, it's very concerning that we are getting contradictory information from the same source from the institution as well as what Prof. Mbatha is saying. And then we requested again the memos that authorized all those the trips that Prof. Mbatha took. We were told that their Microsoft Outlook can't trace the information, you know, the past 5 year information they can access from their, you know, Microsoft Outlook, because they said the travel, especially international travel, was approved by the chairperson of council through emails, but they can't find those emails. And then we also requested from them that they provide us with a policy on delegation of authority so that we can see what's really going on. They said they do have the policy, but the Vice Chancellor's traveling is not covered in that policy. So you can tell from this that most of the policies of the University of Venda excluded, you know, the VC in them, meaning that, you know, you can say the VC was given a blank check because he was not covered by what covered other employees of the institution. There were other allegations that were made, leveled against the VC. Members could have seen in the report that there was no evidence to substantiate those, and then they remain as allegations or unsubstantiated. There is also a matter of Ms. Pendu, who was employed into the position of chemist officer. We noted that before the position was advertised, because it was advertised for the second time in 2009, also advertised in 2008 before Prof. Mbatha. But when Prof. Mbatha was appointed, there is evidence in the form of an email, which Prof. Mbatha also provided, and Ms. Pendu also provided that. The email was written by Prof. Mbatha to the HR director to say, sure, that I have perused the documentation relating to the recruitment and the subsequent proposal to appoint Ms. Pendu. But I've noted also the technicalities that, you know, she faced that made her not to be appointed. And then though she has skills, and then he recommends that the position be advertised as soon as possible, and then the requirements be crafted in such a way that they also accommodate those candidates that do not have full qualification but have skills. So we are saying that from this email, then the Vice Chancellor has perused the documentation related to the recruitment of Ms. Pendu in 2018 and also noticed the technical difficulties. But now he's making it in such a way that Ms. Pendu could be accommodated because she had the skills that they needed to establish the office, but she didn't have the qualification. Though this did not appear in the advert, they still said qualification, but the fact that there's this email which the HR director was sitting with led to the appointment of Ms. Pendu, despite that when she applied, she did not even give them the copies of the qualification she claimed to have acquired. So she claimed the qualification she did not even have. But the thing is, the university did not verify this qualification. So she was shortlisted, and she said even in her statement to the committee that on the day of shortlisting, I got a call from the registrar to say to me, we can't find your application, have you applied? And then she said yes, but they said we can't find your application on the basis of that. So can you resubmit? You see, now they are going all out to make sure that this lady applies. So the lady applied.
Sorry to disturb you. I just want to check. How much more time do you think you may need? Because we need to be very careful not to get into 10 o'clock, considering that it's a three-line work. So we just want to check how much more time you may need so that we know how to
take just less than 5 minutes. I can just, like, you know.
Okay, close, so 5 minutes. So at 6 minutes past nine, I will have to ask you to conclude so that we can move on to legal.
Yes.
Okay.
So, yeah, that is one of the things that we have seen, that this lady has lied both to the University of Venda, which she was dismissed for the offense. But even when she came to the committee, she still lied to say, you know, at the University of Venda on her CV, she said she had a diploma in practical bookkeeping. To the committee, she said, I have a 6 months course in bookkeeping, which I passed, but the university was dilly-dally. The Damelin College was not giving me, you know, my certificate. And then when we wrote to Damelin to say, can you assist us with the information? Because we wrote to her first to say, give us your details, like your ID and the name of the campus. She said, no, I forgot my ID was the Siskai ID. I no longer know it. So she didn't even give us the name of the campus where she, Damelin campus, where she studied. But we wrote to Damelin National, and then they wrote to the relevant campus. We got information that it was not even a 6 months course. It was a 3 days course. And then it was a short learning program, which she did not even pass because she failed, you know, the assessment that was given for that day. That is why the college can't award her with the certificate that she wants. And also maybe moving with speed to infrastructure development. We have noted that the Department of Higher Education has also made certain allegations against Prof. Mbadi that he was a director of Black Capital, which is not. So we are saying that, you know, the department shouldn't make such bold allegations against people without first conducting a proper investigation against them. And then the fact that also the department didn't take action or didn't implement consequence management against the university when it failed to get the minister's approval for infrastructure development of more than a 2 billion. So with regard to SMU, I need to indicate that the evidence that was provided to us and the oral testimony showed that there's no evidence to support that the process of the recruitment by the institution was flawed and was done hastily. So when we looked at the time that they started, you know, with the recruitment process, it took them over 12 months. So you can't say it was hasty, 12 months. And we also did not find any evidence that the system that was used by EMSA, the voting system, to start with, it was not the Skype as alleged by the Higher Education Transformation Network. And it was a voting system that was created by EMSA. And it was presented before the committee, and the committee did not find any evidence that the system was insecure. And we also have noted that there were gaps in the policy of the appointment of the vice chancellor with regard to the fact that the disclosure information of any matter of a candidate is not, you know, provided to the Senate and the IF for them to consider before they vote on the suitability of the candidate. And then the other thing is that in terms of the disclosure, Prof. Mbadi did disclose the sexual harassment matter However, he didn't disclose all the records pertaining to the matter. So he disclosed some to the academic partners and also indicated during the interview by the selection panel that I will submit certain documents, but we found that other documents were not part of the documents that were submitted, like the High Court ruling on the CGE report. We also did find out that he didn't submit to them the High Court ruling also on the setting as the review and the setting aside of the mediation reports. So those information did not form part of the disclosure. The question is why, you know, because now you and also the fact that he didn't submit to them the council minutes where he was exonerated on the basis that, you know, the findings of the Mudise report or the mediation report, where it was, you know, that he had a consensual relationship and then there was no prima facie evidence that there was a sexual harassment. So that information was not submitted to them. And even the legal opinion that the university SMU received indicated that he didn't expressly state that, you know, there was a CGE matter was not really well expressed in that meeting. So the question is why, you know, that information was concealed while other information was presented. Chairperson, I will end here. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mimu Diba. I see the Whip's hand has just gone up. Can I check what the hand is for, yes, Honorable Whip?
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and good morning to colleagues and all staff members. Chair, I thought you were going to request us to make contributions, so I already raised my hands for that purpose.
Okay, noted, Comrade Brooks. No, we'll now take our a reflection from the legal unit, and then we will open up for members to. I'll guide how we then go into that process. But for now, can we just note the inputs from legal? And maybe we should also just say, really, to Memo Diba and the team in terms of our research team, and in fact, the entire committee staff. We really want to thank you for, you know, the hard work you put into driving and supporting this particular process. It's not been easy from the get-go, before we even started. And really, you have been able to be of great support to the committee, and we really want to appreciate that. So I'll now hand over to colleagues from the legal unit.
Thank you, Chair, and good morning, members. And this is part of my line. And Chair, I'm just going to speak a little bit about the process, not so much the content. As members well know, the committee is bound by the Constitution to conduct oversight. It's a cornerstone of democracy, and its ability to positively influence the exercise of public power must not be underestimated. And, you know, it's often said that the best disinfectant is sunlight, and certainly in the parliamentary context, Chair, there's no better sunlight than oversight. That being said, Chair, we reminded the committee from the very beginning that oversight is not intended to be a judicial function. The role of Parliament is not to determine the guilt or innocence of public officials. This is, we enjoy no legislative powers to remove any person from office here or to penalise any person in any way. Of course, Chair, that being said, a process like this may cast light on issues that may later become the subject of criminal or civil proceedings. And in those proceedings, the courts will apply the requisite rules of procedure before arriving at a finding. In the case of Parliament, though, our rules specifically provide that we may conduct inquiries. And in any case, even in the absence of such a rule, there would be no legal impediment to the holding of an inquiry, provided that it is for purposes of oversight. And it's on this basis that the committee then proceeded to inquire into the very serious allegations that were made. The rules further, Chair, don't specify the manner in which a inquiry must unfold or the process that must be followed. Nonetheless, we advised at the very beginning that the committee adopt a terms of reference by which affected parties and the committee could be guided. And we specifically ensured that any person was able to provide evidence for the consideration of the committee, whether in support of or to refute the complaint that was made. We also advised that we steer away completely from the merits of the sexual harassment and labor issues, and that the process is member-led throughout. All of this, of course, because you don't want to have an adversarial process. You wanted to conduct it in a way in which oversight is conducted, except just maybe a little bit with a little bit stricter parameters than our usual oversight, because we were looking into a number of issues. Fundamentally, Chair, we advise that before adoption of a final report, all affected parties should have an opportunity to comment. And Chair, therefore, in light of all of this, it is unfortunate that the process was in some ways met with some resistance or reluctance, should I say, which sought to cast some doubt on the integrity of the process, because certainly from our side working with both chairpersons and the committee, we tried our utmost to accommodate all affected parties and to ensure that the process was fair. Nonetheless, Chair, in our view, the draft report is balanced. It analyzes the facts available to the committee. It makes several recommendations to strengthen the higher education sector, because at the end of the day, this inquiry was not about any one individual. Rather, it was about whether there are gaps or inadequacies in the way Univen and SMU conduct certain business, and if so, how we can resolve this for the betterment of all institutions. And I think that when one looks at the recommendations, and Mpaha has gone through a few of them, this has certainly been achieved. In many ways, though, Chair, this report, once adopted, is only the first in a process of many steps, which will require still additional oversight going forward, and then possibly amendments to the law. And those proposed amendments are included in the report, and of course members are free to add any further observations in that regard. Chair, I must emphasize that the report that currently is serving before members is a draft report. So even if it is adopted today, it's not the final report that will serve before the House. As mentioned, we still need to complete the final step of providing affected persons with an AUDI, after which we will make changes if necessary. So where, for example, we have made errors of fact. So the purpose of that AUDI is not to reopen the process or reopen the matter, but rather to ensure that there is factual correctness in the report, and to make sure that we haven't misinterpreted any information. Mpaha did point out that there were certain things where there is still a lack of clarity. Chair, on that note, I'm going to hand over to my colleagues who are in attendance as well, Ms. Gangan and Ms. Ngema, so that they can share their views. But from my side, that's all. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you so much. Can we note from the other colleagues if there's any more contributions? Okay. I'll take it that colleagues are covered. I see Ms. Arunsa, your hand has gone up. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to add, though, that as much as we did contribute as a team, I just want to acknowledge that most of the evidence leader work was conducted by Ms. Modiba. Much of the work that was done with regards to evidence lead, especially, was done by Ms. Modiba. So I just wanted to acknowledge that in the meeting. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Ms. Arunsa. No, we really do want to thank Ms. Modiba and the entire team, of course, for you know, really steering the ship on this. I just wanted to check from colleagues from legal if witnesses are allowed to circulate the report once we've shared it with them for their engagement. Is that allowed, or or not. Connect. And then perhaps, oh, I see Tiloshni, your mic just went open or has been open perhaps.
Yes, Chair. Good morning, Chairperson. I just have some trouble with my Zoom. It doesn't allow me to raise my hand. So my apologies for not raising my hand. So I just wanted to greet the members and greet my colleagues and to all on the platform this morning. I think that it's important that we acknowledge members for their role, for the robust and rigorous engagement which rendered this process a productive one. And I think it's important to thank the research team, Ms. Madiba, who worked tirelessly, as well as my two colleagues at Legal, who really went over and above to ensure that the report was well-crafted, fair and balanced. And then also, you know, this report was only possible, made possible with the fact that those that came to the committee and that were willing and not obstructive gave the information, without which this report would not have been possible. I think what's important is what we take away from this process. So the recommendations on the way forward are crucial to ensure that safeguards, checks and balances are in place, and more importantly, that there's accountability in the future. So in a nutshell, this report is not the end, but instead it's a guiding beacon to the beginning. And oversight, as we know, it is a continuous process, and hopefully the recommendations in the report will be implemented. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you so much, Ms. Gangan. I think, Ms. Abraham, you're trying to answer my question about what happens in terms of once we've circulated the document, can they also further circulate it or not?
Chair, our meetings are open, and therefore all records that serve in the meeting are open as well. I did ask Mpafa to ensure that it's highlighted that this is a draft document. It is not the final report that will be adopted by the committee. There's still some clean up that needs to be done. So I don't know if that is going to happen. I don't know if members have any further input. And Mpafa first wants an opportunity to rework the report a little bit before we send to affected parties, or if the intention is to send it in the current form. That of course is going to depend on the comments that come out later. But certainly once the draft is adopted, there would be no reason not to share it, as long as people are aware that it is still a draft report, Chair. It will, I assume, take a few weeks until we adopt the final report that will go to the House. Thank you.
All right, thank you so much. I'd just like to take a round of hands if there are any particular questions relating to process. And then from there, we'll take a round of hands that seek to engage the actual report in terms of making amendments, or, you know, if people want to subtract certain. So basically engaging on the actual report. So I'd like to take this round of hands now, is if there are any questions to either the research unit or to the legal office in relation to process. Can I check? Okay. I don't see any hands, so I think we all honorably clear.
Thank you, Chair. The button was refusing to press. To both Legal and our team there led by Mem Mpafa, on 4.1.3.5, we noted that Mr. Maja had authorized the VC to lodge an application to review the CG report on his own. Whereas on 4.1.3.9 again, we also noted that Univen lawyers failed to advise the university that Prof. Mbati can file an affidavit to dispose the CGE report, as was a conflicted party to this. So both of them seem to suggest that both the council chair and university lawyers had advised in written format the vice chancellor to dispose, to go and contest that CG report. And then on 4.29.2, we are making an observation that Prof. Mbati does not take responsibility for disposing this affidavit to review the CG report on behalf of the university and council, despite being incomplete in the matter. Don't you think, legal, don't you think that on this one we might be falling into a trap where he can simply say, this is what I said even when I came to the committee, that these ones are, they want to find me guilty by all means necessary. Even when there's evidence before them that I was executing a task of my employers, they still want me to take responsibility of it. Don't you think that we are falling into that trap on that one? And then on the second one, I think Mamudiba covered it, the one of 4.21.8.3 on the letter. Again, my view would be that we did not, we could have questioned it a little bit better in the inquiry ourselves, despite there being an email on that matter. But us not knowing the contents of the email he was responding to, don't we think that, again, we might be shooting ourselves in the foot? Obviously, I'm not a legal person. You guys will assist. Where we are concluding based on one thing, and we may not have given him an opportunity to respond to that particular pattern, saying this is, we have found this email, which you have, but give us an email you were responding to, or what is it that you meant here, so that we give him the benefit of Audi. So don't you think that we might be making an observation here based on something that was not spoken to or dealt with in thoroughly? Thank you very much. Those were the two issues, Chair, I wanted to raise.
Thank you, Honourable Itie. Can I see if there's any response from legal?
Chairperson, I don't have the opportunity right now to look at it closely, but just very briefly, on the first issue, I think that the what was trying to be raised in the report was the fact that a person in this position ought to see that there is a conflict issue. And regardless of the fact that ordinarily as accounting officer, you would sign such documents, was it appropriate in this particular case? Now, of course, even in Parliament, if Parliament is taken to court, as we often are, we often appear in the Constitutional Court, where it is the Speaker that is served with those documents. The Speaker signs affidavits on behalf of Parliament. Often it is the Speaker who is accused of certain things and then still signs that affidavit. Even there, Chair, it's a little bit different to this particular case, where the conduct related to personal conduct and not so much conduct that was part and parcel of a person's job. So in a case where, for example, as accounting officer, the institution is being taken to court and certain decisions of an accounting officer is being challenged, that wouldn't raise the same concerns around a conflict of interest as it would where the issue really is in the personal realm, which I think that was, Mampaho can correct me if I'm wrong, but that was my understanding. That was what the concern from the committee was in respect of that. And then in terms of the second one, certainly as part of the Audi that's going to be given on the draft report, we would look at additional documentation if such documentation is available or things to clarify the committee. Mampaho did point out there's actually several examples where we didn't have sufficient information, and I think it's important for the committee to take note of the fact that this isn't a court of law. So we didn't have the benefit of a prosecuting authority that has forensic capacity and so on to go and dig and find evidence. We dealt with what was made available to us at the time. And if there is a way of considering further evidence without reopening the matter, so in other words, correcting statements that we've made simply because we haven't applied our minds to the facts available to us, or for whatever reason that documentation was not made available, we can certainly look at it again. But I would think that that could form part of the audit process going forward, Chair.
Okay, thank you very much, Ms. Ibrahim. Memudiwa, do you have any contributions from your side?
I think Fatima has addressed it, that where we don't have information or there's contradictory information, then the affected parties will have to provide us with information so that we can be able to review what we have said, because what we have said is on the basis of the evidence we have received.
Okay, thank you. I see Ms. Ngema, your mic is open.
Thank you so much, Chairperson. Greetings to myself and to all the members and everybody on the platform. I was just, Chairperson, trying to check what was the letter that is the reference to the last question from Honorable Letizia. And my trying to run with it is not working quicker as I'm on the same budget. But Chairperson, I thought
your mic, your sound, you come and go. So I don't know if you're far from where the mic is, but if you can stay and like keep the device stationary so that
thank
your sound
you,
is consistent. Thank you.
I hope I'm audible now, because I don't know if there's a problem maybe with my gadget here, as in other meetings the same, or that I'm told that there are echoes with my when I speak, there is an echo that also arises audibly.
Okay, I can hear you now.
Thank you, Chairperson. I want to say the committee alleged again that whatever it was guilty, and whether the letter that he was letter, which we sort of wanted to see that what was found the case,
okay,
or something.
Like Gemma, for purposes of the meeting being fruitful, you know, I don't want us to, because I was trying to see if we can pick up what you're saying. Can I kindly advise that if you can make your recommendation on the chat, because we're losing you literally at every second. It comes and goes. So if you can make the input you're about to make on the chat, that would be really appreciated, if that's okay with you.
Great, Chairperson, that is fine. I'll do that. Thank you so much. I'm sorry about that.
No worries. Okay. Thank you so much, colleagues. I'd like us to move. It's 9:28, and we need to conclude by 9:30. The committee staff and I have agreed that what is essential is for us to understand this. Okay, firstly, this is a working document. So what we are about to adopt is a document that we can say at this point, this is a reflection of how the inquiry has gone. It's a reflection of our observations, and these are the recommendations that we're making. Then in terms of the grammar and all of that, I'd like to propose to colleagues that grammar and spelling mistakes and those type of things, I'd like to propose to colleagues, if it's okay with the meeting, that those type of things, we all agree that throughout December, whatever it may be, we will continuously send our recommendations to Memudiba for the document to be refined in terms of, in relation to that. What we can then focus on now is the content of the actual document. what exactly are we saying the recommendations are, where we can then say, you know, this is where the recommendations need to be strengthened. This is perhaps where the observations aren't necessarily a true reflection of the engagement. So that is what we need to get to the crux at of today. Of course, again, what will assist the process is if members can you know, indicate that there's a particular matter on 2.2.3 and speak to it very quickly, but also if members are able to then submit something in writing to the research unit or to the secretariat to assist them in the actual crafting of the document, I think it may assist. I think these are recommendations we often make when we adopt minutes to say maybe, you know, if members are able to write that particular recommendation in a manner that reflects what the member feels was being said in the meeting, let's do that. But essentially in the meeting, we'll agree we'll agree the last day of work. we'll agree to the sentiments of what you know, the observation or the recommendation needs to be changed to. So with that being said, colleagues, it's 9:30 on the dot. We need to have logged into plenary at 10 o'clock. Please note a round of hands from members that would like to make contributions to this particular process. We will then adopt this document as a draft or a preliminary report that is still a working document and must be contributed to. And I think we can all agree as members that before this document is circulated to affected parties, you know, we must have refined it to the best way possible before it even gets out there. Having said that, I will then note the Honorable Mahlatsi, Honorable Litsie. Can I take Honorable Mananiso first, Honorable Litsie? So I'll say Honorable Mahlatsi, Honorable Mananiso, and then Honorable Litsie.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and good morning to yourself and to all colleagues. Chair, we, as a component of the African National Congress, we have gone through the report precisely because when this process was being undertaken, some of us were not necessarily part of the committee at that time. However, that's why we saw the need that to discuss it thoroughly and extensively as a collective.
Yeah.
Therefore, we have agreed in principle that we will make a formal subject clear. However, for purposes of records of this meeting, we'll allow Honorable Litsie to lead us in making the submissions in as far as the African National Congress is concerned. Thank you very much, Clark.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mahlatsi. Honorable Mananiso.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me welcome the report and as well emphasize on how we appreciate the work done by Professor Buga. And I want to say to the team, they actually made our work in terms of our section 56 and 59 on the Constitution of ensuring that there's oversight and representativity of our people. And I want to align myself with what Congress. Actually, Honorable, but for now, for recording purposes, let us give this opportunity to Honorable to actually do our input as a recommendation from the EOCD to the document that we have received. And as well, I'm aligning myself to what you have said, that we must submit via the Secretariat Office on where we think that it should be omission or additions in terms of paragraphs. So by that, I would want to actually adopt this particular draft preliminary report and saying that Comrade Lidier, Honorable Lidier must actually continue in terms of making the submission from the university.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mananiso. And let's also appreciate the efforts of the ANC component to the portfolio committee for really trying to ensure that this process is made a bit easier. It's tough this morning to have to try and do this in the time we've been given, but we also wanted to ensure that a draft is adopted before the festive season, or before the break rather, sorry, to ensure that various affected parties are able to interact with the document. So, but also that members can also interact with the document as well. So I'll hand over to Honorable Litsie to make contributions on behalf of the ANC component to the portfolio committee.
Thank you very much, Chair. Noting the time we have, I'll just run through the recommendations that we are making. On part A of on Univen 5.1.1, we agree that there must be an apology by the current council to Prof. Pendler on how they handled the sexual harassment case. But we are also saying they must extend that apology to the portfolio committee so that we can see they must send it to Prof. Pendler, send it to the portfolio committee and publish it on their website. We're also saying an appropriate compensation must be determined by council on how they the university treated Professor Pendler on a very serious matter of sexual harassment. So here we're not sure whether we should ask council to give a maybe 3 months salary as per that time's salary scale or 6 months or 1 year. So we said the appropriate the council there must determine an appropriate compensation to her, because we feel she was hard done. We also have a recommendation to DHET that it should develop regulations to bar council members who fail their fiduciary duty. So here we're saying these council members, some of them might be council members of other universities now, whereas they would have failed to to do their their council work at that time. And it can't be business as usual. When people don't do their job here, they are rewarded somewhere else. So we're saying DHET should develop regulations to make sure that these council members who fail to do their job are barred from participating anywhere in the sector, be it in board membership of CITAS, Council of Universities, and a Council of TVET Colleges as well. So one to, DHET must develop that, and within 3 months of the adoption of this report by the National Assembly. 5.1.2 must include plan on implementation by council. Sexual harassment policy should be explicit on handling complaints against senior management by council HR committee. So here we're saying the sexual harassment policies generally in the system there might be this gap where if it's about a senior leader, the vice chancellor or a CEO in a CITAS or a principal in TVET colleges, sometimes this sexual harassment policy is not clear. There are those gaps there. So here we're saying DHET must also make sure that across the board, all universities, the sexual harassment policy is explicit even on handling of complaints against senior management. Sorry, policy development should include participation of all stakeholders, obviously, and 3 months accountability from adoption by the NA should be included. So everything else we're saying, the time frame, because some recommendations did not have time frame, so we're saying everything else, we're asking them to give it to us within 3 months after the adoption of this report by the National Assembly. 5.1.3, here we're saying it must include time frames in which the investigation should be taken, and we're saying 3 months accountability from the adoption by the National Assembly. 5.1.4, a recommendation should be extended to the department to ensure all status contain an aspect related to discipline the VC, as we have also included this one here, because it's a specific one, but the previous one but just, holistic, that it must be the current state in the PZ sector. In fact, we are saying the department should assess the current state in the PZ sector of accounting officers such as VCs and TVET college principals, CEOs of CITAS, and all of those. So the department must have an outlining clear regulations there. And then 5.1.5, we're adding that council should take the responsibility through oversight of management and implementation, because here we're saying management should make sure that those things are done. So Mona was saying council should take responsibility as well. It can't only be a management issue there at Univent. And they must benchmark with other institutions on workplace relationships and policies in handing them towards developing the current approach. Okay, yeah. We're also saying our recommendations are quiet on employee-employer relations, some kind of thing. So relationships in the workplace, relationships between lecturers and students, relationships between a VC and a DVC, a relationship between a dean and a lecturer, and so forth. So here we're saying let's benchmark with other institutions on workplace relationships. Let's find, we're giving this one to the department. The department must do that thing and advise us accordingly, because we believe that some of these relationships in the workplace might not be consensual relationships. It might be that the other party who's been proposed, majority of the time were females, are reporting directly to this proposer. So whilst it might seem as if it's a love relationship, but you might, if you go deeper, you might find that this other person had no other choice. So it's almost a forced relationship of some kind. And when things go sour, even before they go sour, it's not a normal relationship, because this other person has got no right to say no. Once they do so, they'll probably be fired. So this one we are saying the department must try and do. And then 5.1.6, a recommendation to the department on a systemic process on policies on sexual harassment and disciplinary procedure manuals in this regard across was spoken to this. The policy should include, this is what I was just explaining, staff and student relationships amongst other staff relationships restriction within the parameters of the constitution. This one we've covered. And now we're going to 5.2. I also saying that apology should be sent to us. 5.3, appointment of Ms. Pendu as HEMIS officer. On 5.3.1, there you are. Our thing was the wording should change. It was there you are saying the committee notes with concern and our own recommendation. So we felt that we must find a way of we recommend something and not note anymore. We've noted on observations above. So here we must not really note anything. We must recommend. And then on 5.3.2, this deferral should be accounted for by MUT in writing within 3 months of adoption of the report by the National Assembly. So what we're saying, as we're sending the letter, we're going to give the letter to MUT. We're also asking them to account within 3 months of the adoption of this report, what is it that they've done within the 3 months after finding that Ms. Pendu really would have benefited there in the form of employment without the necessary requirements. And then we're also saying this might be a scratch of the surface. So we're asking the department to ensure that in all universities, there is a skills audit to check all employees of that university. So the university must provide the name of an employed person, Teboho Letsie, here, the advert that Teboho advertised for, and the CV of Teboho. So there must be a proper skills audit, because you might find this is not The only thing, this is just the scratch of the surface, because Ms. Pendu would have been for 8 years at Univen and now maybe 6 years at MUT without being detected. So in fact, in essence, if she had not written to the committee, we would not know that she does not have the requisite requirements even now. So we're asking the department to do a proper schools audit within the sector. And then we're saying to them here, maybe 3 months here might be too short a time to do such things. You'd assist us with the time frame, maybe 6 months after the adoption of the of this report, or we can just write to the department and say in June, whatever happens to the report, but in June, there must be a skills audit. So you'll see how you put it there. And then 5.3.4, that is the time frame. 5.3.6, we are saying develop a systematic mechanism to track resolutions and decisions and report such to Parliament within 2 months of the adoption of the report by the NA. So here we're asking these people to, within 2 months after the adoption, to send us the resolution, both SMU and Univen, on how they are implementing the resolutions of this thing. The department, 5.3.7, the department ensure all PSET sector institutions verify qualifications with SAFA. So once they do this thing of theirs, we are asking them that we don't want them to go to this EMS or what, where they verify. DHEC must make sure that all institutions verify their qualifications to the South African Qualifications Authority. It's an entity that reports here. It's an entity that does a good job. Then they will not be doing it a favor. But we are saying the department, if it's possible, develop a policy that says institutions must find ways only of verifying things with SAQA. We can't have an institution suffering whilst the universities that we are giving so much money to verify with the private sector. And then on 5.3.8, we're just saying that you are saying the university must desist. No. We must be clear there, and they must say they must implement something. So our language on some of these things must change. Must be very clear. And then on 5 point, I'm almost done. 5 point, we covered this one.
Is it useful?
5.3.10. We agree that Univen should institute an investigation on the appointment process of the HEMIS officer, Ms. Pendu at the time, and ensure consequence management of officials who aided her appointment outside the recruitment process. So they were saying we must just be clear there that it must they must investigate themselves and tell us every 3 months or so, 2 months, they must give us feedback on how they are implementing consequence management of those officials who may have assisted. On 5.5.2, we're saying we must not only blacklist these companies that abandon infrastructure, but we must also blacklist their directors, because what they do after abandoning an infrastructure project was 2 billion and having spent maybe 300 million, they then go and change the name of the company or register a new company. So here we're saying we must also blacklist those directors. DHEC must then do a thorough research on all abandoned projects across the sector. And we're asking them also to speak to basic education to get a list of those who have abandoned infrastructure projects for one reason or the other. Those people must not be allowed to do business with us anymore. So you can't find somebody abandoning infrastructure project at Univen and then they are appointed at VUT. It can't be. So we're saying, because they'll do the same thing. So we're saying DHEC must do that work, publish that work, give to all universities that these ones are not to be appointed because they have cost us money in another institution. And then we're also saying that DHEC must do so within, that is just a matter of getting information from these institutions. So in a matter of 3 months, they must do so. And then on the part B, on the inadequate disclosure of the sexual harassment complaint, we're saying there must be a policy, and DHEAD must run this thing. Policy must include explicit clause on disqualification of candidates if full disclosure is not adhered to. So somebody says, no, I've done this, whereas there's something else that they've done, they've not fully disclosed. We're saying DHEAD must, with USAF, have that, make sure that on the recruitment, all institutions have a clause on disqualification of candidates moving forward. And then that's all we had on that thing. And then on the general recommendation, misleading, all investigations. We're saying on this one, should have time frames and plans within 3 months period under general section. So everything else, even on the general recommendations, we agree with. We did consider maybe the legal, instead of necessarily going for fine or jail, we did also consider that maybe reprimand, but we are not saying don't follow the section there. We're just saying, maybe let's be lenient on others, but others were saying if somebody must be charged, let it be. So that is all from ourselves. Thank you very much. Apologies for taking long. English is not our mother. Thank you.
No, thank you very much, Honorable Itiye, and to members of the African National Congress and the committee. We truly appreciate the efforts you've taken to ensure that you could contribute to this process. Can I note if there are any other hands? Honorable Boshoff, I know you're on the platform. Honorable Makesi, Honorable Tambo, you did indicate that network is giving you a problem. Can I just check
it? No, Chair, but you must indicate that I also said we adopt and agree. Why don't you say we adopt and agree?
Julie noted, Honorable Tambo, Julie noted, we did see that comment in the chat. Honorable Boshoff?
Thank you. I must say it's quite a lot of information to digest between other things that one also has to do. But I think this was a very thorough job, and I'll still have to do quite a bit of, a bit of homework. In Afrikaans, we would say boekevat. Before I really know, what we have dealt with, we had lengthy discussions and we had all the, Honorable Itiye says, English is not our mother, all the evidence being given to this committee. So I'll just keep my judgment to myself at this moment. But I think, the whole committee and especially the officials who facilitated everything and you who had to take over from the previous chair and to work yourself into the whole thing in a very short time frame should all be commended for the hard work being done. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you so much, Honorable Boshoff. Honorable Makesi?
Also, I'm very much inclined to agree with Honorable Boshoff. I think there's a lot to digest, and I think given the fact that, we're given opportunities to look at the report and maybe make our contribution during the holidays. So I think I'm leaning towards that. And also, I would like to recommend, commend you, Chair, for the work that you have done. And this has been a very lengthy process. And also, the staff, the work that they've put into this, really appreciate all the inputs from the legal team, from our admin, and really appreciate that. So I think, for now, I'll reserve my comments in the report until I've had time to go through it. Thank you, Chair.
Chair. Okay. Thank you very much, Honorable Makesi. Thank you very much to honorable members also from opposition for the comments you've made. We acknowledge the support from the EFF, and I really also agree that members must be given time to make further contributions, but I think there is an agreement that we can adopt this particular report as a preliminary report, and we'll do that officially. Let me just check quickly from legal and research if there's anything you'd like to say before I pose a way forward. Ms. Ibrahim, are you guys fine? Yes, ma'am.
Chairperson, on the side of legal, we would obviously need time to consider all of the additions that have been made, just to ensure that things are legally sound and that they are actually possible to make such recommendations. Obviously, I have made a note of them now, but I'll sit with Mampato and go through it. So any sort of adoption at this stage would obviously have to be provisional on us making the necessary amendments and then the committee having another look to ensure that it's all captured correctly. We obviously can't do this right now. So I'm not sure in terms of way forward whether you would rather that we be given an opportunity to fix and make the necessary amendments and then come back to do an adoption, or to adopt with the proviso that these things must be incorporated, but of course subject to legal advice where necessary. Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much for that. I'd like to then check Mampaho, then I'll go to you, Anele.
Yes, Chair. For me, I'm also having a question to be clarified based on the sentiments by Dr. Boshoff and Honorable Makesi, that they still need time to look into the report. They cannot adopt now. So I'm not sure where does it put us. So from here, where do we go? Whether we effect the changes or we still wait for next year to come and sit and adopt, you know, the final sort of preliminary report so that we can send it out to the affected parties. I'm not sure. Maybe clarity there.
Okay. Thank you very much, colleagues. I thoroughly agree on the fact that we need to allow for members to engage. And I think what Ms. Ibrahim has said is essential, to say that there are matters that have been recommended, amendments that have been made now, that legal itself must go look into in terms of the validity of them and if whether or not they are possible, and on that basis, I'm of the view that we need to then allow for legal to go and do its work, and the research unit as well, allow for members to make further contributions throughout this close of term going into next year. And this must be the first thing we then adopt on our return. I know from the committee staff, it's not what you would have hoped for. You would have hoped that we'd be able to circulate the documents to affected parties throughout this month of recess. Unfortunately, I think colleagues, we're not going to be able to achieve that, because I also don't want us in a situation where there's a provisional adoption of a preliminary report. I think it's a bit messy. So I'd like to propose that we have colleagues from legal and research engage the contributions that have been made. It is dragging the closure of the process. I know we had wanted to really be able to close this process early next year. It means that, you know, in terms of our timeframes, we may be set back a little, because we might still have to allow for a moment where we then allow for affected parties to then engage with what we would have adopted at that point as a preliminary report. Yeah. So I know Honorable Mananiso's hand has gone up. I'll take that hand, but I'd like to then propose that, colleagues, that we allow legal and research to look into the contributions that have been made. First thing upon our return, we then interact with it again and then circulate it for affected parties to work with. Because I know we had considered us requesting for Monday, or was it Tuesday, one of those days, for us to sit as a committee and adopt the report initially before we thought of using this Friday. But I think perhaps, and Anele, you may assist in this case because you deal with programming. But I think the first way forward would be the best way. I'll take Honorable Mayaniso's hand, and then I'll just take it back to legal and maybe to Anele, and then I think we can close. Honorable Mayaniso?
Thank you, sir. Mine is to say to Honorable Mackenzie and Boss of Head, you need to give them a specific date or time, maybe by next week or something. Because if you're going to be waiting for them up until next year to go through this report, why do you assume prior to today it's going to be a problem? So we just need to have a list of specific questions for the issue. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Mayaniso. Anele, is it possible for us to request that the... actually, can I ask kindly from colleagues? I know we're supposed to be hopping on to plenary, but may I kindly ask that we have a 5-minute break? The colleagues can allow just 5 minutes for the secretary, just like I can call the secretary, so I don't have to have these back and forths on the platform. And if colleagues can just, hopefully, members have laptops, they have phones, they have iPads, we can all log on to plenary on one of our devices. I kindly request, colleagues. Thank you.
Recording stopped.
Yeah, it's like 41 rand.